Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Test Traffic Working Group. First of all, we've got the sort of agenda bashing to go through. So the minutes were posted to the list back in, I think, June, July time. Anybody got any issues with the minutes from the last meeting? Okay. I'd like to thank René for being the scribe and Anand for being the Java monitor, which may come in quite useful with one of the later talks. The agenda that we've got is Eric's going to give a very short update on the test traffic measurement network. Then we're going to have a double-hander explanation of NetSense from Franz and Vasco, which I think is an expansion of what was talked about in the plenary session. Then we've got a talk from Timur Sultanov on throughput metrics and packet delay in TCP/IP networks. Is Timur here? Okay. I believe this is a second attempt to give this talk after the remote participation failed in remote presentation failed in Amsterdam. Yeah. Then we have I believe it's Emil. Is Emil? Yeah. You're going to give a presentation of Rob Smets. Yep, yeah, great. And Rob is available on Jabra, I believe, if there's any questions. Great. And that's going to be followed by a discussion of the working group charter. It says Mark Drance on the agenda, but it's actually going to be given by me with input from the floor. Okay. So I think, Eric, you ready? Okay. One thing I forgot to mention, if you want to add comments or ask questions, please make sure you announce your affiliation into the microphones. Thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Eric Romein. I work in information services as a software engineer. I'm going to do the TTM update. The slides were made by Rubenes, who did this update before. The current state of the grid is that we have 110 enlisted boxes, as in they are assigned a number. 76% of that is currently taking measurements. That used to be 74, so we're slowly improving. We've done a number of installs since last time, and those are mostly outside of our outside of Europe, where we have most of our boxes. We've managed to install boxes in Kenya, South Africa, Uruguay, Pakistan, and Hong Kong. The last two with help from APNIC, who are running a deployment project for us, and recently online our test box in Tehran, in Iran. We've also replaced two. TTO7 had been broken for a while, has a new antenna, and is now taking measurements again. And we replaced a box in Ada because of our backup network being located there. No boxes have been decommissioned since the last update, so we have only seen growth. We're running a number of projects nowadays with support of local parties to deploy groups of TTM boxes. In Brazil, most of these have been deployed by now. There's still one to go. APNIC has been deploying various, of which you saw the Hong Kong box on the previous slide as well. We're currently working on a new deployment set in Russia. And also, APNIC is providing us support in new deployments. Pending installs, as in we planned it, but it doesn't run yet, is India. We're currently waiting on paperwork. Two new boxes for the DKICs as well. A new box in Bangladesh and also Taiwan. Looking at the status since the previous meeting, we see obviously a growth in the number of operational boxes, and the rest is fairly stable because we have done no decommissioning. We also have the tthost@ripe.net mailing list, which we've had for a while. We're going to change the usage of that slightly. On that list, we are now going to subscribe all current owners and all new owners. You can unsubscribe if you don't want it. What we're going to do there is announce new deployments of all TTM boxes, and it's supposed to serve as a platform for owners. We sometimes see that owners want to communicate with each other. We can't just give out owner data to everyone, and that's sometimes a bit difficult. So this is like common experiences and opinions on what you do with TTM. So that was it already. Are there any questions?
Any questions for Eric? Okay, thank you very much. So next is Franz first, I believe. France is going to start with a description of what their sense is, and then Vasco, I believe, is going to do the live demo. Okay.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Franz Ratzinger from the RIPE NCC. Some of you might have seen me yesterday already talking about NetSense in the plenary and might ask why another presentation about NetSense. Well, in the plenary, we tried to keep it very general. Here we would like to show you a little bit more about the technical details, how we came to the product as it is today, and what the detailed backgrounds are about it. But to remind you, or maybe some of you haven't been in the plenary yesterday, I'd also like to give you a little bit of history background on NetSense. So it all started with host count in 1990. That was actually done by the RIPE community and not by the RIPE NCC. In 1999, the RIPE NCC started the routing information service. It's a passive measurement service where we collect BGP updates around the world. In 2000, we officially launched the TTM service. It was around before that already as a project, but the official launch was in 2000. And like Eric said in his presentation, we are very happy to now have test boxes on every continent except for the Antarctica. If everybody has an internet connection at the Antarctica, please talk to me. And in 2004, we started the DNS MON service, which came out of a need of root server operators to monitor their DNS instances. And finally, in 2006, the RIPE NCC made an effort to combine all those services into one department and to work together on it, and that was information services. And over the past years, we've made a lot of improvements to these services, but recently we found out that we're still kind of missing the wow factor of all of our tools. And in order to get there, we asked for some outside help, which is a company called Sunnyday. They are based in Amsterdam, and they helped us catalog our entire portfolio of tools and services, which were more than 30. And we tried to categorize all of this into two major axes. The one here on the top is from operational to strategical, monitor, diagnose, and forecast. Monitor is really you want to be alarmed about some issues that happen in your network. Diagnose, you want to look at the issues afterwards. Forecast, you want to see how are things developing in the future. And on the second axis, we have what we actually have. That's our data sets, tools, and then the analysis services on top. And yeah, we figured out that those two categories on the top here are the most important one that we have to focus on a lot. And we also looked at our users, you guys, and we found out that there are basically seven major categories, and we also tried to put you guys in that grid. And here are the two very important ones again. And we decided with NetSense to focus on the two in the middle because there's a lot of overlap. We have in here ISP decision makers, engineers, you guys, but also media and governments. We also talked to our stakeholders at the RIPE, at the last RIPE meeting, which is a big thing that we are trying to do. We really, really want to know what you guys want from this new thing. And we got very, very good feedback from you. Very big points were we need more user-friendly tools, we need to present our information better, we need to provide global overviews of our data and have kind of drill-down approaches. So you see the global overview and you want to dive deeper into the information. And all of you who participated or want to participate in the future by giving us feedback, thank you very much. That whole thing, especially the stakeholder part, your feedback, didn't fit so well in our old development model, though, which was the traditional waterfall model. So we were looking for something new, and our big requirements here were to get continuous feedback from our users, which will result in continuously changing requirements, and we really, really want to react to those changes very quickly and very efficiently. And another thing that we wanted is to have production-ready software as early as possible so that we can really show you this thing, listen to you, what do you guys want, and change it accordingly. And how we managed to do all of that, how we got that all together, I would like my colleague Vasco to explain you a little bit more and then also show you NetSense in a little bit more detail. Thank you.
Okay, hello everyone. Sorry about that little glitch there. My name is Vasco Asturiano. I work also in the information services in RIPE NCC. And I'm going to tell you a bit more in depth about the technicalities behind NetSense and show you a little demonstration of its features. So first, as my colleague Franz was saying, just a few words about how we approach this project. We wanted something to give us rather quick and progressive results with changing requirements. So we decided to move away from the traditional waterfall project management that we've been using before and went for a more dynamic approach that would have a faster and easier response to obstacles and changes. So we settled for a scrum, and that doesn't mean that we started all playing rugby. It's scrum is a project management methodology focused on continuous improvement and iterative development. So we used the agile mindset techniques for the software development. And how does this all work is that we first build a backlog of prioritized user tasks, user stories, and these act as requirements. And then the Scrum team has a freedom of choice on how to implement those user stories, and also has a say on how much complexity is each one, etc. So the whole project gains a more dynamic view. We worked in two-week iterations, which in Scrum terminology they're called sprints. And at the end of each sprint, we do an internal presentation of the software deliverables that we promised to do for that sprint. And after we do this bi-weekly demo, we have the team has a feedback and retrospective session, and we focus on what can we further improve for future sprints and things like that. So we started this whole effort in the second half of July this year, so it was quite recent, and we had 5 people working in our team, in the Scrum team. Since then, we've done 6.5 sprints. I say half because we're actually still in the middle of one, and which will finish this Friday. And we've completed 51 user stories, and this amounted to a whole 331 complexity points. And we use things like this, like a sticky board to maintain the state of the tasks and user stories within one sprint. And for each sprint, we also do a burn down chart, which this basically represents complexity points per days of the sprint. And the red line is the ideal, and the black line is what actually happened. So the top one was for the first sprint we ever did, and you could see we were kind of under the planning. And the one below was a later sprint that for a reason or another, we were more above the planning. But we were able to finish most of the user stories and tasks for all the sprints, so nothing went terribly wrong. When we sat down to design NetSense, the main focus was on building a rich yet clear a user interface. So we wanted things like having simple colors and intuitive and pleasant navigation. We also wanted something that gave us flexibility of development and would be easily extendable, so we could focus on adding functionality later without much trouble. So for the initial release, the functionality that we focused on was just on giving a simple overview to network operators of, first of all, the current global internet state, and also an analysis of their own network. So these are the features that we decided to include in the first release. We wanted to represent the state of global connectivity in terms of packet loss. This was taken from TTM data, and is basically what every user sees if it comes to our page. We wanted an interactive AS dashboard, which would list all the prefixes originated by that AS, and that you could also click around and see some changes in visibility, etc. So we wanted also to display the visibility of an AS or prefix geographically around the globe, and this is basically done for with data taken from RIS, which is BGP data collected at several exchange points around the globe. And we wanted to have a routing registry consistency, which basically compares data that's in the routing registry in the RIPE database with the real BGP data and tries to find inconsistencies, etc. After we've settled for a design, we actually outsourced the styling to another design company so they could come up with a specific styling code. So based on all these assumptions that we had, this is the initial wireframe that we did. All that I've talked about is more or less there. And after making all of this functional, what we ended up with was this. So this is actually what you see if you go to NetSense at the moment. All the elements are more or less there, they just look better. So what technologies we used to do this? At first we considered using a portal system, which would act as a plugin container, but eventually decided to go for a more self-contained web application environment that would give us more flexibility and freedom of interaction between the different plugins. So we settled for Wikit, which is a component-based web application framework from Apache. The different companies were built in Java. We used Ajax to load the data from the server to the website, so we would have dynamic loading of the results and independent plugins. And whenever we needed to plot geographical relevant data, we used the Google Maps API. These were the main technological elements we used. Okay, so now I'll show you a little demonstration of using NetSense. I hope it all goes well. Okay. Okay. So, if we navigate to NetSense. Right.net. This is the first entry point that we see. So basically, this map here is using live data from the last 24 hours. For each continent, we have a selected set of test boxes that are sending continuous packets to the other boxes in the other continents. So. From this, we can measure outbound packet loss from each of the continents to the other ones. You can just scroll over any of these, and you'll see it shifts that automatically. So everything is 100%, which means last 24 hours there was no packet loss in our measurement. And then, if you want to go into your own network, let's try. Just put a prefix here. You can see that this is actually doing a validation of the prefix. So if you put something that's CIDR invalid, it will eventually not let you do it. Perhaps I need to do a refresh here. Oh. So it seems that I got blocked. I don't know, is there something someone can do to let me through? Okay, alright. Oh, it's getting better. Oh, yes. Okay. Will you let me through? Okay, let's try again then. So, okay, now we can see that actually validation is being done. So If I put something like this, then it doesn't actually let me go forward because it's not a valid CIDR. So, if we get true, then we see all the companies start loading data through AJAX. You see this one is still loading here, now it finished. What we see is here on the left side, we see all, we first find out that the prefix was actually announced from AS3333, and then we list all the prefixes that are announced also from that AS. And from here, whatever we do here will propagate to the part on the right. So in this case, we don't have a lot of prefixes, but if we would, this would paginate, and we could actually sort by the last time we saw an update for this prefix, etc. So here on this side, we see the visibility of the prefix, the prefix itself. So we can zoom in per continent, for example, here. We see all the exchange points that we are present, and we see what's the ratio of full table peers versus the ones that do see the prefix. In this case, it's all 100%. And down here, we see the routing consistency, as I said before. So we do see the routing BGP, and there is a route object present in the RIPE database. So it all seems to be okay. We can also run this for an AS number. So let's try actually the same. Okay, in this case, we get again the same list of prefixes, but none of them is selected. So we actually see the visibility for the whole AS, and we see that in some places it's less than 100%. This is probably due to this V6 prefix here, which doesn't have full visibility. You see, if you click on it, you actually see the map updating, and you see there it's 83%. So, and down here on the routing consistency, we check all the route objects that are seen for this AS, and also what's seen in BGP. So we actually see that for the V6 prefix that we see in BGP, there is no route object present in the database. We can also see things like the import and export peers, as they are mentioned in the outnorm object in the RIPE database. And we find some inconsistencies here. You can filter to filter out the things that are okay, to show you all the things that are not okay. So in this case, we see in the RIPE database there are this import peers mentioned, but for a reason or another, we don't see this in BGP. Now, that doesn't mean they don't exist. It might mean that we just do not see the AS paths that include this a left neighbor. And you can try to find the inconsistencies the other way around, so the ones that are not present in the database. Let's see. Okay, we have some also. So in this case, we see some left neighbors of this AS are seen in BGP, but the import attributes are not present in the right database. So this gives you a quick overview of what might be happening with your network. Okay, this is it for a quick overview of the tool. So from here on, we have a couple of things down in the horizon, a couple of features that we want to expand this with. For example, besides packet loss in the global representation, we want to display also packet delay between the several regional areas. And we want to display how is the root server reachability from each region. This will be taken from DNSmon data. I want to be able to show not only for the whole globe, but to be able to zoom in to a specific region or even perhaps a specific country, if that's more interesting to the user. Display stats about the global routing table, so we can see growth of prefixes throughout time, and also distribution of prefix sizes and aggregation levels and things like that. So this will all be probably in the main page, so what you see for the current state of the internet. Then we want to integrate NetSense with single sign-on, so we can link it with other systems and make the navigation transparent to users, and probably do things like be able to create alarms from what the query is at the moment, and some other ideas that might come. Besides BGP visibility, we want to plot also BGP stability in geographical terms. So we see if a prefix has sent many updates or is actually stable in the last day or so. We'd probably want to do another plugin that links with BGP Viz, which shows the visualization of the updates per time, so we can visualize how have the updates been. To make a representation of the transits of an AS, so we basically do this calculation taking into account the AS paths that we see, and make a percentage of which neighbors are more used in BGP. Whenever we try to look something for a prefix, instead of showing only the exact match, we might want to show more and less specific prefixes, so we can see if there's any overlapping routes or things like that. For a prefix list for an AS, we might want to be able to travel back in the past, so want to see how did my prefix list actually look yesterday or last week or last year, and to do a little statistical analysis on the distribution of the prefix sizes. And besides all of these miscellaneous ideas, of course we are open to feedback, and greatly encourage if you see something that you think, wow, I'd really like to have that there, to display that information about my network, then please let us know, because we want to know. This is very valuable information for us. And you can always reach us at netsense@drive.net. And you can also, for this week, you can catch me in the coffee break area. I'll be actually there right after this session and tomorrow during the day. And feel free to use this. I believe that probably the you can all access it now. And that's it. Do you have any questions?
Any questions for Vasco or Franz? I'd just like to say, I think it looks fantastic. I the Rapid NCC has always provided really good services and really good data, but that's sort of a step ahead, I think, in the way that things should be presented. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so next we have Timo talking about bandwidth measurements.
Is this here? No, it's trying to speak up.
afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I want to present to your attention this work, Throughput Metrics and Packet Delay in TCP/IP Networks. Next slide. 1 year ago, at TRIP 56 meeting in Berlin, we presented a method of measurement of available bandwidth between two points in a global network. First of all, I would like to tell about two metrics in TCP/IP network. Two bandwidth metrics that are commonly associated with a path are the capacity and the available bandwidth. The capacity is minimum transmission rate among all links in paths. Note that the capacity does not depend on the traffic load. Available bandwidth, in turn, by turn, on the other hand, is a minimum spare link capacity that not used by other traffic among all the links. On the figure one, you can see the illustration for this matrix. It should be noted that the first time these metrics were presented in the work of Davrolis. Okay, I want to tell you about the model. So, let D in the equation 1 represents the point-to-point delay. Here we refer to it as a minimum path transit time for the given packet size denoted by fixed component delay. With a fixed delay component, we can now subtract it from the point-to-point delay of each packet to study the variable delay component. On the figure 2, the graphic shows the linear dependence between average network delay and packet size. The slope angle concerning AXX is available bandwidth instead of the next angle, that's meaning capacity. prolongation of the line, prolongation of the line to the AXX gives us the intercept value A. This intercept value is a minimum delay that have a very small package which transmitted in the network from one point to another. The well-known expression for throughput metrics describing the dependence between a network delay and the packet size is a version of the little slow. So we can modernize this version for the case when paths consist of two or more hops. We get the simple way for estimation or throughput metrics, including active bandwidth and capacity. So the equation 3 shows us the way how to get the bandwidth. New methods suppose the variation of packet size of the same path for measurement of the throughput metrics. If the testing process between two fixed points is organized by two packets of different sizes, then we get two different values. The equation 4 is a system for finding available bandwidth, and the equation 5 is the equation for capacity. On the figure 3, you can see illustration of this equation with two different packets. So after that, when we found it, this way of measurement, we would like to make an experiment with RIPE TTM system. The design of the RIPE TTM system meet all requirements shown by our method. Namely, it allows to change the size of a testing package and to find network delay with a split hair accuracy. We should choose two different sizes of packages. The first sizes of package will be 100 bytes as default. In the other case, it's reasonable to add testing the big sizes of packages. We took 1024 bytes with frequency at 60 times per minute. After that, on this slide, you can see the screenshot that demonstrates how we are making how we're making this experiment. It's necessary to resize the package and frequency of testing. Testing results available in by Telnet to RIPE test box on port 9142. It's important to get the data from both ends of the investigated channel simultaneously. In the case presented here, it's TT01 RIPENET and TT143 RIPENET. Obtained data will contain required delay of packages of the different sizes. Also, we need to distinguish that package. On this slide, we are going to the sending box and we'll find the lines. The last number in the line is the second number of the packet. It's necessary to us to find this number on the receiving side of the channel. And the provisions last by one is the packet size. Then we are going to the data from receiving box and should and have to find the number of package that we interested in. For that number of packet, it's easy to find network delay. In our case, it's 44,084 microseconds. The following number of packets, you think you can see it in the slide, has a size of 100 bytes, and the delay is 43,591 microseconds. So the difference is 493 microseconds. So after that, when we got our delays, we have to compare these results, because the minimum of number of our experiments are five pairs of delays for precisely experiment. In the last column, you can see the difference in average delays. In the last by one columns, you can see the minimum difference in delays. This experiment was made between point TT143 and TT01. So we send a package from point TT143 to TT01. In the another slide, it demonstrates the similar situation, but from the other point to another. Then the required bandwidth and capacity of the link. The first one is from 143 to 01 can be calculated as, and we using these equations to get these values. In the first one, available bandwidth is 13 megabits approximately, and the capacity is about 40 megabits. So we see that capacity more than available bandwidth. Wrong symbol. The bandwidth and capacity of the return link can be calculated as the similar way. So we got also two equations and have two results. Also, we have developed utility available bandwidth, AV-band, the GeoWise new method using our grid ping. So this algorithm is very simple. It works with ICMP protocol and realize this method, but it's not very precisely. We don't have such accuracy with like Rectab's box, because it's round trip time and not one way delay. So it's a problem. The main problem of our work is a little number of measurements. At this moment, we made only one experiment with RAPTTN system that gives high precision of measurement and make some local experiments with utility and with local network providers. Also, it will be great to include in the RAPTTN system that makes statics and packets possibility of calculation, available bandwidth and capacity. It's ideal to compare the results that received by our method means with all the utility pass rate and password. Unfortunately, such tests are not made yet. So we are looking at the partners that can help us to make additional measurements with RAPTTN systems and utility pass rate and password, because we need to compare the results that get by RAPTTN system with, for example, utility pass rate. Thanks. Thank you for your attention. If you have any question, I can answer it.
Thank you very much, Timo. Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Next, we have Emil presenting on behalf of Rob Smets. This is a presentation on IPv6 deployment monitoring.
Sorry? Hello, my name is Emil Aben. I work at the RIPE NCC Science Group, but this is not my presentation. This is a presentation that originally was Rob Metz was going to do, but unfortunately he had a conflicting meeting. So I'm just a messenger here, but a very willing messenger, because I think this is a really nice measurement study, or a proposed measurement study on IPv6 deployment monitoring by the TNO, which is a Dutch research institute, and GNKS consult. And Maarten Botterman, who's also here in the room, can answer any questions on the specific project. So this presentation is about V6 deployment measurement. First, it will detail a little bit about already existing deployment metrics. There will be a breakdown of the metrics, of the measurements that are going to be done by in this project, into sub-measurements, and then a little bit about the specific methodology on one specific measurement that help from the community is needed on. There's some considerations on privacy, commercial and confidence and retention, and finally a call to participate. So why I think this presentation is, or this project is important, is that this here provides the community a way to provide feedback for this for these measurements. So first of all, the existing IPv6 deployment metrics out there. There's a couple of ways that you can go about looking at V6 deployment. Jeff Houston had a nice overview of them. They all have their pluses and minuses. For instance, if you look at the RIR stats files and look at the numbers there, you're only measuring intent to do something with V6, not real deployments. For instance, traffic volume measurements are hard to do from multiple locations, especially if you go cross operator borders, because it's very hard to share data or to share that type of data. So this project was European Commission commissioned, and based on the 2008 European Union Action Plan that had a specific goal that Europe should set itself, which was at least 25% of users should be able to connect to the V6 internet and access their most important content and services without noticing a major difference as compared to V4. So that's and that should be reached by 2010. That's in 90 days. So. But this study was commissioned to actually provide the European Commission with some measurement data to provide some feedback on what's actually going on there, and it's really user oriented. So this project was took their definition and put it out into three different sub measurements, as you can see in the underlining already. So the three parts are the unique users. That's the part that everybody's been focusing on, I guess. So that's the fraction of V6 users over all users. And the rest of this talk is going to be about that specific sub-measurement. The two other parts are most important content and service providers, as Maarten already briefly touched upon yesterday. That's done by looking at the Alexa 500 for every country and see if there's a V6 version of a website available there. Other component is major difference in experience for a user, and TNO developed a framework for that. It's an ITU standard called G1030, so you can look up the details on that. There's also a white paper on the whole methodology available on a website that I'll show later. So then you get, if you add that all up, you get the metric that is going to be measured is U times C times R. So it's important to note that this is stricter than just looking at how many users are able to connect, because the other two factors also play into that. And nice thing is you can do this per EU state. You aggregate it, and you can look over this as a function of time, which is probably the most interesting thing. See how this develops over time. So the measurement methodology that is going to be used is basically needs three parties to cooperate. First, there's a participating website, and that's what this presentation is about. In part, is getting people to participate in this or figure out if there are any roadblocks for people to participate in this. The idea is so to have a participating website that has a little bit of JavaScript on there, puts a little bit of JavaScript on a website, and users load that bit of JavaScript from the website. It gets executed, and in the execution, this thing does get three objects from a test server. And the thing there is that one object only has an A record in DNS, one has a quad A record, and the other one has both of these records. So you can actually see what the user behavior or what the OSP behavior is for a specific user. So you get all that information on a test platform. This little piece of JavaScript also generates a unique ID, so you can correlate these three, and you store these results in a database for later processing. Nice thing is that your website doesn't have to be V6 enabled. So if you're only on V4, your end user will still have that little bit of JavaScript loaded over V4, and the measurement is really between the end user and the test platform. As some may notice, this is very similar to what's already been done. Sander Stefan has a website called v6test.max.nl that does similar measurements, and Google has done similar measurements. But the nice thing about this measurement is that it is going to be hopefully scaled up to multiple websites participating, and the results are going to be presented to the European Commission. So hopefully measurement data from this will actually get onto the desk of decision makers there, and so they can actually see what the real current state is of things. So a little bit more detail on what data is collected. Of course, the type of request, IP address, and there's a session ID to correlate all of these things. There's a site code, a referral URL, and a site name, and these are sort of used together to see if there's any tampering with the measurements. Some timestamps and a browser type. And there's some sanity checks done on the data at the point where it gets in. So then there's a whole loop of things that happen periodically, and I'm not going to go through all of the details here, but one interesting thing to note here is that to a geolocation database, V4 addresses are mapped to a country, which is nothing special. But the nice thing is that with this, you have a correlation between a V4 and a V6 address, and through that correlation, you can actually get some geolocation information for V6. So if somebody would run this on their website, what would they get? And this is an example of what's currently in this test platform, and this is real data that was collected on the www.tno.nl website, which is a scientific organization. So you expect the V6 deployment a little higher than in other places, and what you see is the upper graph has V6 deployment on the y-axis. The x-axis has countries, and you see, for instance, for a country like Latvia that Rob highlighted here, you see a 5% deployment rate, which is quite a bit higher than numbers I've seen before that are all around like 1% or But he also put down some numbers on how many measurements he has currently. So it's only two V6 and 37 V4. So there's you can put some question marks at the statistical significance of this. But for instance, Sweden has 29 V6 addresses already, and they're at the for this single site, and they're at a 6% deployment rate. So and it's also nice to see sort of different differences between countries here. And the lower graph shows details for four countries. I don't know, is it visible? Upper one is the Netherlands, the middle, the one below is France, then UK, then Germany. And on the far right-hand side, you also see that for UK, you see it's only 24 V6 addresses, and that causes that graph to be bumpy because this is accumulated data up until a data point on the x-axis. And of course, other graphs here are possible, and I think this people from this project are very would be very cooperative if people think of any nice other things that they would want to do with aggregate data on this. So of course, in every measurement you do, you have measurement errors, and you should be aware of what errors there are. In this, of course, anything where a user does not map to a single IP address all of the time cause problems. For instance, proxies, the usual suspects, proxies, and NAT/DHCP, and these are things that you can beforehand do little about. But you can possibly correct afterwards if you have some measurement data. Things that you can not do something about are browsers without JavaScript, but the expectation is that that's a minority. Other problem would be too little diversity in websites, so you only get the scientists who are possibly much more V6 connected than the rest of the world. So hence a call to participate in this measurement effort. Another problem could be that you have too few unique V6 addresses, and Rob did a little graph of what upper and lower bound with a 95% confidence level would be for a 0.1% V6 deployment percentage. If you look at 10 V6 addresses, you see that the upper bound would be 0.2 and the lower bound would be 0.05. So it's you're off by a factor two. And for this type of measurements, that's still very useful. So you're at least in the good order of magnitude. So are we still looking with the microscope or not? You can answer that type of questions. Some other considerations here, of course, are our privacy, commercial, confidence, and retention. So ideally, you would want to store as much data as possible, so later on you can correct if you find DHCP effects or NAT or anything that you can detect and correct. And having all the data available, you can think of having a nice geolocation service come out of this, for instance. Whereas you could also think of time limiting all the information, you raw data that you have in your database, and then only get to aggregate statistics that you keep, and so you have no possible data problems there. Another thing here is privacy, but the issues here are very similar to the global internet advertising solutions like the AdSenses or the double clicks. It's the same mechanism. You put some code on a website, and a third party gets to see some of your traffic. So it's all about trust here, I think. So you need to have a good policy on how to deal with that, and that's where the commercial confidence comes in. So, of course, webmasters will only have access to data related to their own website. And there won't be any data disclosed to third parties at any time that would allow identification of persons or websites. That's the current policy that, that this project is working under. If you want to be stricter, you can think of additional measures like anonymizing V4 addresses or anonymizing parts of V4 addresses. V6 addresses are already truncated at only the first 64 bits are kept. So there's a little bit of anonymizing going on there already. So that being said and done, if people want to participate, this is the URL, www.ipv6monitoring.eu. The white paper I was talking about is also available from this website. So if you want to participate, go to the surprisingly participate link there. And there's a little story there on why you should participate and what you get back from it. So all the cool graphs you can think of about V6 deployment of your customers. And you will also help provide useful data to the European Commission. And if you don't want to participate, then it would be really useful if you could provide feedback on why you would not want to participate and what would make, if there were changes that would make you be willing to participate in this. So that's it for me. Is there any questions? So everybody's participating.
See, we've got a couple of people coming up to the mic. Daniel?
Okay. Daniel Kahnbeck, Rep in CC. I actually like this very much because we had some ideas at the Rep in CC to do just those kind of measurements. And if the European Commission, apparently, is forking out money to do this, I consider it my tax euros at work, and the Rep NCC doesn't need to do these kind of things. And apparently, you know, judging from the presentation, they have even engaged some people who know what they're doing, which is even better. I think my feedback immediately would be that the NCC would like to participate by putting this at least on some websites I'm responsible for. But the one thing that I'd like to discuss with the TNO folks beforehand is what kind of data they will publish from this. And I'm not concerned about privacy at all in the sense of, you know, what my website gets doing or something like this. I'm concerned about individuals' privacy. But I'm also concerned about sharing raw data so that other people can analyze it. Maybe with a little bit different methods than this particular study does, and I'm planning actually to go talk to them once that's done and the answers are acceptable and the publication policy actually looks, you know, acceptable, then I'm quite I'll definitely see that this little JavaScript thing is put on the websites of the NCC that I'm responsible for, and I'll also go campaign, find other people doing it, because I don't think there's any significant concern to a webmaster here, other than it that it may break their customers, but that's something you can very easily check against, and it would also be in the interest of the TNO folks to not do that, because that kills their study right there. So once we have a little bit more clarity about whether we can get at the raw data, I think we can wholeheartedly support this and ask our community to participate wholeheartedly. At the moment, I'm doing it a little bit reserved because I just don't know, I mean, what kind of benefit in terms of raw data we get out of it.
Sorry, did you have a question? Yeah.
All right. So, Steve Padgett, one comment I had regarding like the graphs you were showing was that one thing that would probably be very beneficial, if, especially for like service owners, would be when you present a user with an A record and they're able to fetch it, but then when you present them with the A record and the quad A record and they're not able to fetch it, right, those are obviously users that are broken, and services aren't going to want to deploy both A and quad A until they can, you know, verify that the users can, you know, aren't going to break when given that. And then the second point, you'd mentioned the IPv6 is being aggregated as /64s. I know, at least from personal experience, you know, from ISPs are typically handing out like /60s or somewhere around there to their end customers. Whereas on the IPv4 space, you know, they may be presented with one single IP. So I have a /60 at home. Depending on what LAN I'm on, I could be coming from any of those, but, you know, I'd only have one IPv4 address. So you might see better correlation, you know, depending on how you segment.
I think that's so your second part. I think if you have the measurement data, then you can sort of see where you sort of have to cut up things. And to your first point, that sort of if you want to do sort of performance type things or see what is broken, that's as not the specific focus of this study, I think. If there is like the IPv6 test.max.nl does something very similar to what you were talking about.
But I think you've got the data here.
Yes, true. So, right. Yeah, indeed.
So, Daniel, did you want to?
Yeah, I just wanted to understand what Steve was saying, because as far as I see, this methodology is not dependent on quad A's from the websites that participate. Right, because it only needs a quad A for the test platform, which is there, right?
Right, but if the website that's participating is considering moving to quad A, right, they would want to make sure their users aren't broken by moving to that.
Oh yes. Okay, but I just wanted to prevent the misunderstanding that you have to be V6 enabled in order to participate in this thing.
Martin, did you want to comment on Daniel's earlier question?
Well, yeah, particular on the data retention policy or how we deal with the data at the moment. The intent was very much not to release it to anybody outside of the study team. We do have a reputation to keep, and obviously sharing that beyond would be very damaging, well beyond the project. However, the question came up, like, would it be possible for others to re-research as well on those data? And the feel is that we would want to keep that very limited. At the same time, if we would be able to do this in collaboration with RIPE NCC, in order also to be able to reach out further to its members, I think there's a case that we're certainly going to consider. My feel is, and I would just like to get your confirmation on that, that you would not see it as a break of our data, the care we deal with the data, if we share it with RIPE NCC for analysis.
Okay.
Is that can we raise hands if that's not a problem, to share the data with RIPE NCC?
So would it be better to raise hands?
Can we raise hands if it is a problem to share it with anybody outside of the product team? Okay, can we talk later? It's just one person, that's why.
The dark room.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, I think we're running a little bit ahead of time, which probably emphasises the point that I'm trying to make with the talk about refocusing the test traffic working group. You may have seen that we sent out a proposed new charter. I don't want to discuss the text of the charter here, but I want to start the process of building consensus about what it is that we're trying to do with the working group. Test traffic measurements, the test traffic measurement service
was conceived in 1997 and has been in full service since 1999. The sharp-eyed ones among you will notice there's a bit of a conflict between the date that was on Franz's slide before, but I think we're in the same sort of area. We had a couple of buffs to start with, and then the working group itself started over 10 years ago. I became chair about 2 years ago, and at the moment we've been carrying on with the original charter, which was formed, the group was formed to discuss specifically the right NCC TTM service. We did have scope in it to have other performance measuring techniques and devices, but it was pointed out subsequently that it's specifically not about comparing ISP performance for marketing purposes. We're not about saying, you know, somebody shouting, look how good my network is compared to theirs. It's more about the use of data to show, to characterise networks. Common agenda topics are always the presentation on the test traffic measurement operations, and also on the developments, such as the presentation that we had earlier about NetSense. What we've also noticed is that there's been a bit of a creep away from the original charter. So we've got people talking about other measurement projects. We usually have an update from the IETF on what's happening around traffic measurement there. There's been talks about the other tools that have come out of the Information Services Department that have used TTM, but also about things that are quite removed but are really about measurement. So what we want to do now is effectively rationalise the working group to give it a broader focus, make sure that it's a forum that is available for the NCC, the right community, and beyond there, a global forum for people to discuss what's going on, to collaborate on data, the gathering of data, the tools that are used for gathering it, the analysis of it. And also to have that kind of scope that Franz was talking about before, where we've got the operational side moving from monitoring through diagnosis and then into the sort of strategic idea of forecasting based on the measurements that have been taken. But we want to make sure that it's still not just a marketing tool for different networks, so that people aren't using it just to push one ISP above another. And the question is, do we have your support to do this? And if we've got this, then we can take it further and start working on that charter and move the group in that direction. Is there anybody who's got strong objections against what we're doing there? No? I must say that the support on the list has been wholeheartedly in support of it. The response on the list has been wholeheartedly in support, for which we thank you. If we are going to push forward with this, and it sounds like we have the support of the community to do it, we're probably going to have to change the name to differentiate it away from the test traffic group. We've come up with a couple of suggestions. One's just an acronym of measurement analysis and tools. One of them, somebody suggested internet measurement, which, considering it's my initials, I'm quite happy with. But if anybody's got a better idea, one that doesn't massage my ego. So what I'd like to do now is does anybody have any questions, comments, or any ideas for discussion of it? Or objections? Dave? I think it is working.
You asked for thinking and like to give support. We think this is a good idea and it's a good way to expand the group.
Great. Thank you. Daniel?
It's basically codifying the status quo, right? We're already going in that direction, so what are you worried about?
Well, we wanted to make sure that before we formalise that position, that there are no objections to it, but thank you, yeah. Okay, thank you. The next steps on this, I've been asked by Rob to give a very quick update on this to the closing plenary on Friday, mainly to make sure that we aren't just speaking to the people who are already in the working group. So, because as we're trying to broaden the focus, we want to make sure that we bring other people on board who aren't aware of this broadening of the scope. We'll carry on the discussion on the mailing list about the proposed wording of the charter. And hopefully we'll be back in Prague in May of next year with a new broader focused working group. Okay, thank you very much. And that concludes the working group for today. Thank you.